So mini quizzes, it's an easy thing.
Yeah.
You know, take what you talk about and just put it in a basket and boom.
It's a new school year. And I don't know about you, but I'm looking to power up my teaching. We're talking powerful teaching next.
And now it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other.
Yep.
First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like no others, yep. With Tim and Scott.
Oh, Scott, this is a topic we love. I can't wait to talk about this today with our special guest. But it's good to see you, man. This is our first show of our fall season. I haven't seen you since, like, last June or something.
Or last Saturday.
Something like that. So what are you up to these days? What's the latest?
Oh, man, I'm joyfully teaching fourth grade. And I'm really excited about the school year. My kids are learning how to come in quietly still.
I can relate to that.
And no, I'm just so excited about the school year, Tim, and the potential and some of the things I've got planned for these kids. And I know you're excited for your year too.
Yeah, I'm still in fifth grade and got a great class. My kids are just on fire this year. They're super cooperative and love to learn. I'm having a good time, so I'm able to stretch and be creative and have fun.
Tim, I gotta admit something to you.
Yeah.
I'm doing another podcast.
What?
Yep.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, Tim. You heard it here first, everybody.
What's your podcast?
It's our school PTA podcast, Tim.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't.
We're getting all the parents to subscribe to the podcast and hear the announcement or come from the PTA.
That's a great idea. That could be our tip for the day.
There it is. Mic drop.
Okay. Well, try that one, everybody. Make your own podcast.
Hey, Anchor. Use Anchor. Just look for Anchor. It's nice and easy.
Oh, well, I think that's what we need to do.
You need probably
to start that side of things, I think, for us here, Scotty. Well, enough of our yakking. Today we have a very special guest with us. I am so excited to talk to her. We have Patrice Bain with us. She is a veteran teacher of 25 years in a middle school, and she was a finalist for the Illinois State Teacher of the Year. She was also a Fulbright Scholar in Russia, of all places.
Wow.
And she's written a new book that just came out. It's called Powerful Teaching, Unleash the Science of Learning. Ah, brain science of learning. We love it. Patrice, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Hello, everyone. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, gosh, Patrice, I looked one time at that scholarship, the Fulbright deal, application, and I went running.
Oh,
that's really impressive. Can you tell us a little bit about how you did that and what you learned as you spent some time doing that?
Oh, my gosh. It was one of the highlights of my life. I'm a history teacher, and so I had seen something online, to apply, and so I did, and I got it. It was absolutely wonderful. So I spent most of a summer over in Russia, and there were actually 14 of us teachers from the United States that went over there, and it was so wonderful. We lived with different people. So I lived with a woman by the name of Irina and her babushka that I just fell in love with. I fell in love with the people. So kind. They would give you the shirt off their back. They were so generous. We were able to visit so many places. We were on the news every night. We were the Amerikansky teachers. we were able to go to villages where we were the first Americans ever to visit. It was truly an amazing experience. So don't let the application scare you off. Go for it. It will be a highlight of your life.
I think you just inspired me.
When did you do that, Patrice?
Oh my goodness. It was.
Was it when it was the USSR?
No. No. It was maybe about 10 or 11 years ago.
Hmm. Wow, what an opportunity. That's so cool.
Oh, it was fabulous.
So we're both big fans, and Scott and I have been both learning a lot lately about the brain research behind learning, interleaving, spacing, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. We actually had Dr. Robert Bjork on our show. Do you know who he is?
Yes.
Yeah. So we love this stuff. So get us started here. You wrote this book, Powerful Teaching. Give us a synopsis. Why would teachers want to read your book? And then we'll get into some more details.
And this is hot off the press too. This has just came out this summer, right?
Right, in June. Well, let me give a little background. I was very fortunate to run into two cognitive scientists, Dr. Mark McDaniel and Dr. Henry Roediger III. I'm in St. Louis, and they are affiliated with Washington University in St. Louis. And they were wanting to start some rigorous, robust research in an actual classroom setting. Most learning had been done in university settings, in laboratories, and had not been done in classrooms. How about getting a study on how kids learn in an actual classroom, right? And so we were a good fit. And so this research started in my classroom. And the director of the research was Dr. Pooja Agarwal, who is my co-author of the book. So we have worked together for about 15 years. And this study, which started in my classroom, then went on to my school and my district. So it was multi-year, multi-age, and there were over 1,500 students in this study. So what we looked at was retrieval and spacing and interleaving and metacognition. And in the book, we call those the four power tools because those are things that every teacher can be using. So that's kind of how that started. But my real meat of this was I would have students come to me in the, you know, first part of first quarter and all excited say, Mrs. Bain, I have a B in your class or I have an A in your class. And I'm like, I know. But then they would follow this up with, but I never get good grades. I always get D's and F's. I'm not smart. And how can we have an educational system where kids internalize failure by the time they are 11? And so I would say, but you're doing great. You have a B or you have an A. And I say, it's because no one taught you how to learn before. You are now learning how to learn, and you're very successful. And that's when I realized that this learning science, teaching kids how to learn, was such a game changer. Because, you know, we talk about social emotional learning and dropout rates, but why don't we just teach kids how to learn and have them internalize success rather than internalize failure? So I took a lot of this research that was going on in my classroom and started developing strategies based on retrieval, based on spacing, based on metacognition. And, you know, I would start every school year with, I'm your teacher and I'm going to teach you how to learn. And so that's the basic of the book. You know, this, it's great tips. It's not based on fads or anecdotes, but it's based on research. It doesn't cost a dime. Your school doesn't have to put out all this money. It's strategies you can start using in your classroom tomorrow. And it's all geared towards having kids learn how to learn.
I love that. I mean, I remember having a student come to me and say, you know, this was a fifth grader and 10-year-old, and say, you know, say, I hate math. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, you know what math stands for, Mr. Bedley, right? And I'm like, what? No, what does math stand for? And she's like, mental abuse to humans. I was like, oh my gosh.
No.
How in the world are you going to learn anything about math if you already at 10 years old hate it that much? Like, I have to figure out a way for kids to not only have a passion for it, but also just to be able to do what you're talking about, is love the learning so much that the subjects themselves are all approachable and they don't feel like areas of failure. You know, I don't play golf very much because I'm so horrible at it. And I learned to hate it over time. And like, we have these kids year after year that feel like failures in these subjects. What else are they going to feel? So
exactly.
I love what you're talking about. Get them to feel, you know, get them that sense of accomplishment through some strategies. Now, give us some specific strategy. Give us some hot things out of your book. Not trendy, but hot things that you feel like a teacher could take out of this. And okay. See, what do you mean? What are you talking about with this powerful teaching?
Okay. Well, a little backstory here. So the first year that Pooja and I were working together, and I taught sixth grade history, we did a pop final at the end of the school year. And so students couldn't study for it. It did not go in the grade book. We simply wanted to see, because we had been looking at retrieval all year, how much could students remember from the things that had been retrieved throughout the year versus things that had been taught but had not been retrieved. And so this was fascinating. Clearly using retrieval works. You know what? Let me stop here for a second and do a little background. Learning occurs in three steps. One is encoding, and as teachers, that's where, you know, we stand in front of the class and we're imparting this great information, right? That's encoding. And the second step is storage. And that's when it goes into our students' heads. And it's like, yay, we've done our job, right? I've imparted the knowledge and it's now in our students' heads. And often that's kind of where we end it. But step three is, instead of simply having that information sit in our students' heads, let's focus on pulling that information out, and that's retrieval. And so what we want to do is be able to not only impart this wonderful knowledge to our students, but to have our students be able to get this information back out to retrieve it. So this year we looked at retrieval. So questions that had been retrieved versus not. And it was a fascinating study. It clearly showed that retrieval was very successful. But as I was looking at those tests, I looked at my top GPA student. And he thought, okay, she's gotten 100% on every test and all the homework, right? Did very well. Yet on this pop final, she only scored in the 50th percentile. And it took me a summer of pondering to try to figure out, why would my top GPA student not do better? Why would she not be able to retrieve or remember more information? And I realized as I was pondering that summer that homework was not effective for me or my students. Because my students had pretty much mastered looking at a question, looking up the answer, writing it down, and repeat. There was never any retrieval. And so 3 days later, if we tried to have a discussion, where was that knowledge? And so I realized, you know, all this time I spent grading every night, it wasn't effective, it was not efficient for the students or for me. So I quit giving homework. I started that next year without giving any homework. I know, right? You're those of you who are listening, you can't right see now the thumbs up I'm getting here.
Well, we're big believers in that too. My school actually has a no homework policy, believe it or not, because we know that there isn't research that really supports homework effectiveness.
Right. Right. But I still had to come up with, okay, so how can I get my students to retrieve? So what I did was I created what I called mini quizzes, and they are mini on little recycled 2-inch by 3-inch pieces of paper. And so I would take whatever we discussed in class the day before, had there been homework, you know, what things would have been on homework. And I simply cut them up into little slips of paper and I put them in a little basket. And then the next day when they came in, I would randomly choose 5 and I would go over them, and the students would then be able to answer the questions. They would retrieve. Now, if they got them all, that's excellent. If there's some they missed, that was their metacognition letting them know, oh, that's the one I need to study. So I went from homework, hours a night, to a 15-minute analysis after school of what they could retrieve. I had 7 different classes, so my little basket had several questions, and I would encourage my students. I would say, make sure when you're passing in the hall that you tell these questions to your peers. Because number one, chances are the next class would not get the same 5 questions. And I let them know, anytime you're asking your peers these questions, you're helping them retrieve more answers. So it was a win-win situation. And then, you know, the next class, I would randomly choose another 5. And I found that when students knew that a mini quiz was coming the next day, they started listening differently in class. And we were able to have more discussions. It was a total turnaround, a game changer. They appreciated not having a lot of homework at night, and yet they were able to retrieve this information. I was able to go much deeper with questioning. My essays were very deep and filled with critical thinking. The students had mastered the basics, so we could go a lot farther. So mini quizzes, it's an easy thing.
Yeah.
You know, take what you talk about and just put it in a basket and boom, ask the next day. Or another quick one is I like to use a lot of think, pair, shares, or turn and talk, those types of strategies. You know, after that you are teaching something for a few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, depending on your class, just stop and say, turn to your neighbor and tell 2 things you just learned. What you are doing is you are helping them again retrieve or pull out this information. You know, and then come together and have a group share. And you can, you know, this person, that person, all of a sudden you have all these different ideas that are being retrieved. So it's awesome for the students to be able to stop, reflect, and retrieve. So that's something else. 2 things. Another real easy one is to talk for however long and do a brain dump, or my 6th graders preferred calling it a brain drain. They could handle that a little bit better, but simply stop and write down what we just talked about. These are all so much more effective than doing homework, than reading a question, writing down an answer, and repeating. These are techniques that when you use them in your classroom, your students can start retrieving this information.
Yeah, it's the act of retrieving itself that cements that learning into the students' minds.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And that's why kids, I think, learn better from quizzes. I mean, you just give kids, the more quizzes you give them, and like what you're doing there with your questions in a basket idea is great for kids. And that's why I think a lot of these online games work so well, where you're giving them question after question and they have to get the answer and then move to the next question and so on. And flashcards. I mean, it's one of the oldest teaching tools, learning tools in the book. And yet it's so effective because of what you're describing right now, because you're having to retrieve that information. You see the one side of the card, you got to retrieve what's on the other. And the act of doing that makes it more of a long-term, puts into your long-term memory. But believe it or not, Patrice, we are already out of time for that. And we have to play a game with you already. Boy, that just flew right by. I can't believe it.
Well, Tim, and research also says that when you play, you're more likely to remember and learn something. And it's like, it's a massive percentage. I'm not going to quote it because I'll totally quote it wrong, but playing actually helps that too.
Totally.
Yay.
Yeah. That's why people need to do Global School Play Day to encourage.
That's people. Right.
So Patrice, you were a Fulbright scholar in Russia. As we know, we heard from you earlier. So today we're going to ask you a few questions about the country of your scholarly endeavors. And we're going to call our little game, not Fulbright, but not so bright in
Russia. Oh, dear. Oh, you don't know how nervous I am right now.
Good. Okay. So, yes, playing the game, not so bright in Russia.
All you have to do is do better than Dr. John Hattie.
Yes.
I listened to that. He got 2 out of 3.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, Scott, why don't you tell our audience who Patrice will be competing for today and what they will be competing for.
Hey, Patrice, you're going to be competing for Melissa Ellis. She's an elementary science teacher, and she can use these powerful teaching strategies. If you're able to answer 2 out of the 3 questions correctly, Melissa will be awarded a free copy of your book. Is this true?
This is true. Hi, Melissa.
Patrice, you're amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Hey, Tim, back to you, buddy.
Okay, let's get the questions rolling here. We're going to run out of time. So, Patrice, here we go with your first question about some things that were not so bright that happened in Russia. So, on one very not so bright thing happened recently in a Russian subway. A metro passenger rode on the subway with something quite odd perched on her shoulder. What was this strange object? True story. Was it A?
A live bald eagle.
Was it B?
A live fox.
Or C?
A live full-grown male peacock.
So one of those things was on the shoulder of a passenger in Russia. Somebody snapped a picture of them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is a guess, and I'm going to guess a fox.
That's a really good guess. That's it.
It is.
What does the fox say? No, 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 no.
All right. Well, let's go on to number 2. Recently,
two men
walked into a shopping mall in Moscow to buy an iPhone XS. The not bright part of this story is how they decided to pay for the phone. Which of these is the true not so bright men? The way that these men from Russia paid for the phone. Is it A?
The two men brought in a bathtub full of coins to pay for their iPhone XS.
Is it B?
The two men tried to use 50 used Android phones to pay for the iPhone XS.
Or is it C?
The two men brought in a mink coat to try to trade for the iPhone XS.
And this is a true story. And they actually were successful, by the way. Maybe they just really liked the idea in the Apple store. So, Patrice, is it the bathtub full of coins? Is it the 50 used Android phones? Or is it the mink coat that they tried to use to pay for the iPhone XS?
I'm going to go with B, the Android phones.
Well, you're not quite so lucky of a guesser on that one.
Okay, the mink coat.
That would be an even worse answer.
A bathtub full of coins?
Yes.
I hope it had wheels on it, Tim. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And they actually,
I was just thinking logistically, how could they have done that?
Yeah.
Hey,
wow.
Come on, they can do anything. All right.
That's true.
Number three.
Okay.
In the city of, you might have to help me out on this one because I've never heard of this before. You, maybe you haven't either. I know Russia's a big place. In the city of Chelyabinsk.
That's perfect, Tim.
Okay. They have a not so bright traffic law. What is illegal to do in terms of driving in Chelyabinsk? Is it A?
Drive with a chicken on your lap.
Is it B?
Drive with a dirty car.
Or is it C?
Drive with a dirty chicken on your lap. Just kidding. No, roll all the windows down at the same time.
All right, so believe it or not, one of those is illegal. Driving with a chicken on your lap, a dirty car, or rolling all your windows down at the same time.
All right, I'm going to go with the second answer.
Does that drive a dirty car?
Yes. Well, is that right?
What? You got it right.
What?
And you had no help, right? That's right. It is illegal to drive with a dirty car. What they're saying is, though, that...
And it's just weird to drive with a chicken on your lap.
True.
Evidently, that's just a way for the police officers to pull you over to get their lunch money from you, because they'll find you on the spot, and then they can go out to lunch. It's like, oh, let's see, we need to have lunch. There's a guy with a dirty car. Let's go ahead and pull him over.
Well, that is very interesting. The roads... are not the best of roads, so it would be very easy to get a lot of lunch money, I do believe.
All right, so Scott, how did Patrice do on our game show today?
Great job, Patrice. You got 2 out of 3 correct, and that's good enough to be as good as Dr. John Addy.
Woo!
And a winner. But congratulations, you've won absolutely nothing. Melissa, though, she just won a copy of your new book, Powerful Teaching. We're so thankful that you give that to one of our listeners. We're excited for our other listeners to go get that book. Awesome.
Thank you. And Melissa, I'll be excited to get that to you.
Excellent. Now, Patrice, why don't you let our listeners know how they can follow up? Because you just, oh my gosh, I wanted to talk to you so much more about this. I had so many questions. I loved the ideas that you gave so far. So how can our listeners get the rest of the ideas? Is there a website? Can they buy this on Amazon? What's the deal?
Yes, yes, and yes. The book is available on Amazon. We have a site, www.powerfulteaching.org. I have a site, patricebain.com. My Twitter handle is patricebain1. My email, you can get that from my site. It's patrice@patricebain.com. So yes, send any questions your way. I would love to answer those. I'm presenting all over the country. I would love to come meet some of your listeners and let's get this powerful teaching going. It works.
Right on.
Awesome.
And Scott.
Hey, Tim, did you know we are almost double the registrants for Global School Play Day as the last year, 2019, when we had over 500,000 kids from 70 plus nations? We already have tons of registrants. Like, it's unbelievable that this is taking off. Again, it's not unbelievable because the amazing teachers out there are spreading the word about the importance of unstructured play in a kid's life. And this day, to make people aware of that, is happening again, Tim, right?
That's right. So go to globalschoolplayday.com. It costs $0 to sign up, and we make $0 off of Global School Play Day. This is just a global movement, an underground movement, a grassroots movement to send the loud, clear signal that our kids in this culture are not getting enough unstructured playtime. Too much time on devices, too much time with structured things in their lives. And none of those things are bad, but they need to have time just to get bored and then have to figure out how to get unbored and, you know, learn how to get along with each other, social norms, just how to give, how to, I mean, there's so much that they learn, isn't there, in play and unstructured play, Scott?
That's amazing. And we look at some of the things that kids are facing, being able to deal with emotional stress and how do you do that? Gosh, Tim, you know what? When I'm stressed and I get to go play with my friends, oh God, that stress is gone.
Yeah,
out stress.
Go throw some Frisbee, dude.
Yeah. Right. You know, we know it works and we don't do it enough as adults as much as we should. And we want our kids to understand that because it is almost becoming a lost art because of the amount of scheduling and because of the amount of time and pressure kids are under. So I'm really thankful that this movement continues to grow. Hey, tell some friends, let's get 1 million or more kids playing around the world. You know, that's easily doable.
Excellent. And just a reminder, we'd love to hear from you. And if you like the show, go on iTunes, Stitcher. I don't even know where our...
All of them.
All those places. If you can give us a review, we'd appreciate it. That's how we get the word out, because it's not the number of downloads that push you up on the charts. It's how many reviews you get and the stars that you get on those reviews. So anybody that's willing to do that, we totally appreciate it. And stay tuned. We've got more good shows coming in our fall season here on the Bedley Brothers. We are coming up on our anniversary of 7 years. Is that right, Scott?
7 years of podcasting, dude. Before podcasting was podcasting, I think.
Yeah. I think they called it.
I think it was called radio shows back then.
Well, thank you so much again, Patrice, for being on the show. And thank
you. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on your first show this year. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's our pleasure, man. This is great stuff. And thank you, everybody, for listening. But most of all, thanks for listening.
Mom and
Dad.
Mom and Dad.
We love you, Mom and Dad.
So I could be one of those Bedley Brothers. Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing.